Good day, listeners. Jonathan Daugherty here with another edition of the Pure Sex Radio program. You know, we're a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries, and we exist to help individuals and families move from sexual brokenness to wholeness in Christ and equip others to do the same. In this episode, we invite back Dr. Jennifer Degler, a clinical psychologist and marriage expert, to talk about making sex pleasurable and fun again, especially for couples dealing with betrayal or brokenness. Dr. Degler shares her insights on the importance of pleasure within God's design for sex and offers practical steps for re-engaging with intimacy after betrayal. We discuss the necessity of communication, mindfulness, and sensory exploration to rebuild trust and enjoyment in sexual relationships. Jennifer's tips and insightful anecdotes provide a refreshing perspective on rekindling passion and connection in marriage. To learn more about Dr. Degler and her resources, visit jenniferdegler.com. For additional resources, visit bebroken.org or check out all the links that we're going to put in today's show notes, including some that go back to those past episodes with Dr. Degler. And friends, we would sure appreciate it if you would rate and review the podcast after listening in order to help others find this content. Now, let's dig into today's conversation on making sex pleasurable and fun again. Well, all right, Dr. Jennifer Degler, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you for having me back.
Yeah, so, you know, we've actually had you on two times before. Believe it or not, the first time was over 4.5 years ago, back in December of 2019, where we talked about what men need to know about female sexuality, which was really good. And then we had you back a couple years later in 2021 to talk about understanding your flipped out brain, which was really good. And I loved when you did kind of the example of how we, anyway, how our brains can sort of go nuts and how do we manage that. So you've really been a podcast audience favorite of ours, because one thing that I like about how you address these topics is that you bring a lot of great content and information, but you actually connect it to practical application. Sometimes, you know, we stay up in these philosophical and academic clouds and people are like, great, that's really cool. What do I do about it? So yes, thank you for making those connections real. Before we get into what we're going to talk about today, which I'm really excited about, and that is how to make sex pleasurable and fun for most of our audience again, because they're going through a time of either dealing with betrayal or brokenness in the sexual relationship. Before we get to that, can you just share a little bit about who you are and kind of what you do in your work?
Sure. So I am a clinical psychologist practicing in Lexington, Kentucky. And then I also have, goodness, it's been back in 2010, I started a ministry for Christian wives to help them put the sizzle back in their marriage, called C Wives, which stands for Christian Wives Initiating, Valuing, and Enjoying Sex. And I feel like those are the three things that are hard for women to do after they've been married for a while, which is to want to initiate, to value sex highly, and to enjoy sex, which is what we're going to talk about today. Like, how do we make this more pleasurable? How do we make this fun? And so that is what we are all about at cwives.com. And we have the Dare of the Month, where we email women a dare to help them initiate a creative sexual encounter with their husband. It's a free newsletter we send out once a month to, I think it's up to about 9,000 wives now. And about half of them open it up. It has a really good open rate.
That is very good.
There's a lot there who want to make sex more fun. So that's what we're all about. So I appreciate this conversation today. We don't often talk about pleasure in Christian circles.
You know, I remember when I first learned about the Dare of the Month thing, and I thought, that is so awesome. And part of it was because, you know, from a guy's perspective, so much of like men's ministry is about trying to, you know, push guys into bravery and be courage. And so, but to hear you say, hey, this is for wives and here's a dare, I thought that's provocative. Like that's, you know, kind of cutting edge. And I thought that's a great way to remind us of the equality of value in the marital relationship, and that there is not supposed to be an imbalance of, if I could put it this way, power, right? And so I love the fact that you're empowering women to say, hey, I have a strong voice in this, and it's something that is supposed to be mutual. And so I just love how you've navigated that space where sometimes it can be like, is it okay if I say I'm going to take a dare as a wife and initiate? So I love it that you're doing that.
Good. I'm glad. Yeah, it's a and you know, for some women that feels really scary, like you said, and so I'm always I even wrote a blog post about, you know, what do you do if the dares are hard for you to even think about doing, when giving women some tips if they feel like I'm not ready to just totally jump into this. But to think, you know, it is novelty and adventure. That is one of the things that can help bring more pleasure into sex. And after you've been married for a while, even if you really love your spouse and are committed to this marriage, it can become so routine. You know, you touch me here, I touch you there, you rub this, rub that, bow to your partner, do-si-do when we're done. And it, you know, it can just, your pleasure can decrease simply because there's no novelty. And even the word novelty and the word pleasure can oftentimes make all of a sudden, you know, our defenses come up. Like, what is she gonna talk about doing? Am I gonna have to get whips and chains? And, you know, no, not at all. But we are wanting to encourage people to have this be a place of adventure and play and fun and mutuality, as you said.
Yeah, and so much of what you're saying, I think there's a lot of undoing of poor training, poor understanding of sex. Also, undoing of there's been traumas in people's history, and there's been misuse of people's brokenness getting dumped into a woman's life. And so I think, and I'm sure you see all of that in what you're doing. But you know, just even this topic of how to make sex pleasurable and fun, even kind of putting those words together, I want to kind of maybe ask you to go back to the beginning, so to speak, and say, okay, this was God's idea, right? Sex was God's idea. So, and one of the first questions I want to ask you is, first, what is God's design for sex, and can it actually contain pleasure and fun? Because I will say, I do think there's a lot of Christians especially that struggle with being able to put pleasure and fun into even what they think God's design is for sex.
Yes, that's such a good point, Jonathan. And I think we start with, do we believe that God is pleased by our pleasure? And for many of us, it's not just pleasure with sex. Like, we feel like I shouldn't really enjoy the food I eat. Or is it wrong for me to like really like just revel in this soft blanket or in this beautiful sunset that pleasure that we get from our senses, we can feel like, I think, you know, where scripture talks about flesh and, you know, that we are born with this sin nature and that the flesh is weak, that sort of thing. We actually get confused and think that flesh literally means our
Like
body,
my skin and everything.
like my skin. And it's talking about your sin nature, and we're all born. Nobody had to teach me how to sin. I was just really good at it from birth. But that my body is good, your body is good. Now, sometimes with our bodies, we do commit sins. And so then we have to kind of untangle that idea and realizing, though, my God gave me these senses, smell, taste, touch, sight, sound, for pleasure. He didn't have to create the world with as many pleasurable things as he did. He could have made all food taste like oatmeal, could have made the sky just gray all the time, but he didn't. And when it comes to sex, he could have made it where, okay, and the way that you're going to reproduce and make human beings is you're going to shake hands and that's it. But he said, no, actually, the way you're going to populate the earth, I am going to make it have the potential of one of the most pleasurable experiences you will ever have in your life. And that in order for it to be truly very pleasurable, You're going to need to use all your senses, and all of those need to be turned on and welcome. So sounds are welcome, smells are welcome, textures are welcome, tastes are welcome. And if we don't have a comfortable relationship with pleasure in general, and that's when I work with women, one of the things I do with Authentic Intimacy, Julie Slattery's ministry, is I'll do 6 week online seminars with wives on their sexuality. And we spend a whole session talking about how to make sex more pleasurable and fun. And we start with, let's look at what your relationship to pleasure in general is. Because if it's not even something you welcome, then the idea that we're going to go into the bedroom and all of a sudden you're going to welcome pleasure there as well, we may need to back off of that and get you welcoming pleasure in other ways first in your life.
I absolutely love what you're saying there because I think very quickly a lot of Christians can attach morality to our senses. When, like you're saying, wait a second, the senses are just are amoral. Like, I can't claim that the ability to smell is a moral ability. It's like, but it's only when sin gets attached to these senses that then we can steer them in different ways, right? So I love that you're saying that because I think we just need to sit in that for a minute because you're probably saying something that is quite new to a lot of people out there, that because they maybe have so tied a particular pleasure to a sinful behavior, that now they think the ability to have pleasure is in and of itself a sin. Can you maybe help us, especially thinking about the couple that there has been sexual betrayal, there has been sexual sin in in that relationship? Just taking a step back to this whole idea of play, before we get to the sex part, where can a couple even start? Let's say this is a couple that both of them are desiring to be on the journey of recovery, restoration, health, all of that. Where do they even start to re-engage the goodness of pleasure?
Oh, I love this question. And what I would suggest they do is start with noticing what happens inside of them when something pleasurable happens, particularly something that might enjoy their with involve their spouse. So let's say they reach out, they're watching TV, and they reach out to hold their spouse's hand, or their spouse reaches over and strokes their hand, and that feels pleasurable. Do they armor up? Does their body immediately have this response of, this is not safe? Do not enjoy this. Something dangerous is happening. You could get hurt again. If you enjoy this and begin to trust them, you could be really, really hurt like you were before. Once the body is armored up, pleasure's not going to happen. When we're in danger, our fight versus flight versus freeze response is activated. And if a bear burst in my kitchen right now and comes after me, I am not going to be like, oh, look at the beautiful flowers. Doesn't my kitchen smell good from that candle that I burned? No, all of it is shutting down and I am in survival mode. And so for couples that have experienced betrayal, to realize even the body itself will armor up against the pleasure. And so just noticing that. And when it happens, don't beat yourself up about it. Don't be like, oh, what couples say is, this will never be good and sex is ruined forever. Never gonna, I hate this. And they want to be healed immediately. But instead, you notice, okay, I notice like all I'm kind of armoring up against this. And then just say, okay, armoring up. I notice that you're there. Thank you for trying to protect me. But right now, this touch is safe. And I am going to bring myself back into the sensation because that's what mindfulness is. It's where we use our five senses to bring us back into today. Because today, while you're sitting on the couch watching TV with your spouse and they're rubbing your hand, they're not cheating on you. You are actually safe. You're warm, you're fed, you're dry, you're safe. And so you're just kind of like accepting, it's accepting, okay, my body's armoring up, but I am going to draw my attention back to the feeling of their hand on my hand, and that feels nice. Maybe I'm even going to say to them, that feels nice. Maybe I'm going to turn my hand over and let them rub my palm, which is even more sensitive than the back of my hand. And couples that are just getting comfortable with this need to do a lot of this sort of exploratory activity first, where they're really getting comfortable with receiving pleasurable sensations that are not sexual around one another. They could enjoy food together and then talk about, wow, you know, that strawberry tasted really good. You taste it, you take a bite. And then and again, the body's going to feel that pleasure. It's going to armor up because, oh my gosh, this is dangerous. And then you don't have to fight it. Fighting it will only make it worse. You just say, okay, I get it, body. It doesn't feel completely safe. But that's kind of an outdated, right now, we don't have to do that. We're just going to draw our attention back to the sensation. You can even tell your spouse, wow, I started to enjoy when you were rubbing my hand. And then all of a sudden, I just got, you know, tight again. And then your spouse can just say, I get it. Let me rub on the back of your arm and see if you can notice that. And so we're retraining our body. We're actually retraining our amygdala, that part in our brain that detects danger. We're retraining it that I can be safe with my spouse and feel pleasure at the same time.
So yeah, there's a couple of things I want to ask you about. So a little bit of the way I felt like you were framing that particular scenario was maybe more towards the wife who has felt the betrayal, felt the trauma. And so there's the arming up because it's like, oh my goodness, if this feels good and I've got a lot of safety issues because of how he has broken trust and all that. But can that same exercise also be necessary to think in the same way for the betrayer? Because I'm thinking, hey, if he starts feeling pleasure of touching his wife's hand or something like that, how does he guard against letting his own mind and his feelings go back to his betraying behaviors, where it's like, could this pull up fantasies? Could this pull up history? Is the exercise kind of the same on both sides, meaning you're trying to get back to the present moment? I guess I'm trying to get a little bit more of the scenario from both
Yes.
spouses.
Thank you for pointing that out because it's the same thing that's happening, like what's been paired. And so if pleasure has been paired like with infidelity, unwanted sexual behaviors, then there's the feeling of, oh, I'm beginning, my body's beginning to sense some pleasure, danger, danger, because this led to these unwanted sexual behaviors and I don't want to go there. But again, it's your body is actually your friend. And a lot of times, but when there's been betrayal, nobody feels like their body's their friend. Nobody trusts their body anymore. And so you're making friends with your own body again. You're learning to trust yourself. You're retraining your brain and that I can feel this pleasure. So a man could do the very same thing. So he's noticing, oh, that I like the feeling of her skin. And then maybe an image comes up in his mind that he doesn't want to be there connected with an unwanted sexual behavior. So he can use his senses. Open your eyes. If his eyes were closed, look at her hand. Look at her. But bring your senses into that. Maybe you pick up her hand and you smell her hand. You smell her hand lotion. Bringing your senses back into this present moment with this person. And so both of them are working on retraining their brains at the same time. They're just kind of coming from different places.
Yeah, because the main thing that I'm hearing here is because it seems to me like the fears on both sides are about pulling away, isolating, and kind of going into your own head. For the betrayed spouse, going into that place of I'm unsafe, you know, all that, the betraying spouse going into that place of, oh my goodness, I'm going back to old patterns. And I'm hearing you say, hey, pull all of that out and stay in the present moment. With that, I want to also ask, how important is it, and what might it look like to bring, you're talking about bringing all your senses into that moment. What does it also look like to bring your thoughts and communication and talk? So how important is it? Because I can imagine there's a lot of assumptions that can be made if the spouse reaches over and starts rubbing the other one's hands. There can be assumptions made on both sides. And I've seen this many times in our ministry where when a couple is truly trying to rebuild after there's been broken trust, sometimes talking about those deep, vulnerable feelings on both sides can be really frightening and scary in and of itself. So how important is all of these things to be put together also with communication?
Well, of course, communication is key. And if there has been a history in a couple that the only time they really touch is like this is a prelude, we're going to have some sort of sexual activity, then that sets a pattern in place where it can feel like I also don't want to have receive pleasure from you that is just simply pleasure. And so for a couple to have a conversation up front, like maybe they're listening to this podcast and they're like, you know, let's try this weird thing that this lady from Kentucky is saying. And but let's talk about this and just say, hey, when we're taking a walk today, let's try holding hands. Or let's try giving each other foot rubs, but let's both agree this is not going anywhere sexually. I'm not trying to turn you on sexually. I am trying to give you pleasure in a non-sexual way. Now, you might get a little turned on. He might get erection. She might lubricate. That doesn't mean anything. Just because our genitals are responding doesn't mean we have to do anything about it. And in fact, that ought to be, that's a good part of a healthy marriage is that, yeah, sometimes we would get that good hug and it goes on for a long time. And maybe we do feel a little turned on. And we just kind of let that nice moment just stand alone. And then that's, again, training our body. This doesn't always have to turn sexual. And I think for someone who has had unwanted sexual behaviors, for them to learn that that's okay, that's a good thing, that's a nourishing thing. It's okay to have a need for physical affection and touch and closeness, and that they don't have to use sex to get that.
Yeah, I love what you're saying because earlier, you know, you were talking about how, you know, God has given us five senses. We've got multiple senses to experience life. What does it look like then, maybe? Because, you know, what we're talking about here is how to make sex pleasurable and fun. And I think some people can focus so much on sex as being the singular act of intercourse that maybe talk a little bit about how can we actually bring our five senses into this area of pleasure with one another that really encompasses the fuller idea of sex and intimacy in marriage, but does not always include intercourse.
Yes. So one of the things that I suggest for women to do, or this could be whoever is the lower desire partner, because we know in about 20 to 30% of marriages, that would be the husband that is the lower desire partner. And sometimes that is someone who is not particularly tuned into their senses. They go throughout the day and they don't taste the food they eat. They just are not really tuned into their senses. And the more tuned in you are to your the pleasure of senses, then the more pleasurable sex can be. And so I'll have them make a sensory basket. And they just make this basket and it has flavors in it that they like, smells in it. Maybe it's a candle or a cologne, textures that they like, pieces of fabric, pictures where they like the colors or what they're looking at, sounds. Maybe it's a bell or something. And they will periodically just kind of sit down with their sensory basket and just pick things up and smell things and look at things and see if they can really connect with what happens inside of me. Because when I see something that I think is beautiful with my eyes, I feel it in my body. I just may never have noticed that. If I will tell you, Jonathan, this is probably more information than you want to know, but I don't like the taste of coffee. I think coffee tastes like dirt. But I think the smell of coffee, especially coffee beans, is very, it's like erotic. It's something about the, and so my husband will open up like a new, he grinds his own coffee when he opens up. Wherever I'm in the house, he will bring me the bag of coffee beans when he first opens it. He's like, smell this, you know, because he knows, like, when I really get a good nose full of that, I feel it all the way down in my body. I mean, I can feel it down in my lady parts. And a lot of times, though, we have just disconnected from that. Or if we taste something that is so delicious, we're not just feeling that in our mouth, we're feeling it. And so to get people noticing how pleasure can make their whole body come alive and get comfortable with that feeling, and then bring that into the bedroom. So what do we need to do? What are the accelerators for you when it comes to adding more pleasure into the bedroom? Maybe that is scents of massage oil or candles. Maybe it's a lot of times people's bedrooms, there's stacks of books and papers and computers. And, you know, what do we need to do to make this a beautiful place? And really beginning to think about how can we heighten just the sense, the perception of senses in our bedroom? And where could we have sex that wakes up? Like, I think having sex outside, not where you get caught. I'm talking like you're out on a trail, way, way, way from people. But like trying something different, because all of a sudden things smell different, look different, sound different, the light is different. And we wake up, and all of a sudden things are more erotic in a godly way, not in a sinful way.
As we're talking about this, I'm thinking, okay, there's so many different couples at different stages, and even talking about, mismatched desire and all these kinds of things. And what I'm picturing is that this is ultimately a real slow process. I mean, it's not something that you can rush, especially when, again, you're working on betrayal trauma healing, you're working on recovery issues, you're working on all these things kind of simultaneously. As couples maybe start to go down this road of saying, I want to learn how to engage pleasure with my spouse, learn my own body, start to communicate these things. What are some of the common roadblocks or obstacles that couples face on this journey as they're trying to rebuild and maybe even reignite passion in their relationship?
Well, certainly intrusive thoughts and images. That's something I'm sure you hear a lot about. And I hear, you know, whether it's the person who's had the unwanted sexual behaviors and those thoughts and images intrude, or for the person, the spouse, the betrayed spouse, thoughts and images intrude. And I think that's where couples have to talk about, okay, when this happened, like, have this conversation, not when you're having sex, but like maybe you're driving somewhere in the car, or you're sitting side by side on the couch or taking a walk, with the understanding that is part of recovery, is intrusive thoughts and images. And when that happens, what's our plan? Because far too often what happens, Jonathan, is they begin, they're actually, okay, let's be intimate. Even if we're not gonna complete a sexual act, let's be more intimate with one another. Maybe we're kissing passionately, or we're caressing, and all of a sudden an image or a thought will intrude. And they need to have a plan. And initially, you know, you can try opening your eyes, looking at the person, focusing on the senses of what's happening there. But let's say it's getting the best of you, to be able to then partner with your partner, and to have like they that they can free to say, hey. And you can even have a code word, whether you want intruder. You could simply say that, intruder. And the other person knows, okay, I got hijacked there for a moment. And then to say, okay, then let's stop what we were doing, and let's go back to maybe we're just having some conversation. Maybe we're doing something, a lot of times moving your position. If you were laying down, sit up. Maybe you turn on music, you dance together, you do something where we're going to get out of that same position. It's hard. Whatever the intruder is, it will shift, your brain will shift easier if you change your physical position. Far too often, couples stay in the same physical position that well. But I think there needs to be a conversation about that happens. And that doesn't mean that it's all for naught.
Yeah.
It's like saying this is part of recovery, that these things are going to intrude. And so, but I'm not going to be alone with that. You're going to partner with me and help. And it may be that we have months, that maybe years, where we have intruders that show up sometimes, but we're going to partner together so we don't feel alone when those intruders happen. And over time, as you have more successful encounters, then you will have less intrusions because you are literally forming new neural networks and you're letting old neural networks decay. Those intruders are old neural networks.
Well, and what I'm about to say may sound weird and unfamiliar and maybe even very unpracticed, but I'm going to submit to these Christian couples, Jesus is already in the room with you, so have a moment of prayer,
Beautiful.
because I'm a huge believer in when you're talking about these intrusive thoughts and images, we do not wrestle against flesh and blood. And if there's anything our enemy wants to not see, it's the real intimacy of that marriage connection that is a representative of our relationship with God. And so there's a sense in which there's more at play there than merely a memory or a thought or whatever. I think there can even be an attack that's happening in that. And so you talk about bringing all of your senses. Bring all your spiritual tools into that moment as well, and say,
Yes.
we've got a plan here that's going to include the whole being, our bodies, our minds, our spirit. And so I love what you're saying here. Jennifer, some of the things too that you're talking about, I can imagine there's couples that are listening that are going, okay, wherever they are and kind of in this stage, it's like, man, we've done a lot of work and just to even have these conversations. And now this seems like, I mean, there's a part of me that really desires to go here, but there's still fear. There's all these kinds of other things. Can you talk for just a second about why this journey is worth the effort?
Oh boy, life on earth is hard. And it just having that husband or wife beside you when they are your best friend, it just makes this hard journey easier. And even when that's a person who has deeply hurt you, you can heal. I've seen that, Jonathan, you've seen that. Where couples can come out of this and have a more alive marriage than they had before the betrayal. And it talks in Corinthians about that we are able to offer comfort that we ourselves have received, and to see God redeem the pain. And I just think about, my husband and I have all of our parents have passed away, and we went through a season of a lot of elder care, intensive elder care, and how hard that was. And it really took a hit on our sex life, because I was just exhausted all the time. But now that all the parents are in glory, and we're experiencing this sweet time now where I can focus once again and I have more energy for that part of our life. But as I look at him, my love for him is deeper because I know what we went through.
Oh, yeah.
Even while doing it, cleaning up our parents' diarrhea out of the carpet, you're just like, this is awful. I don't, that's what it can feel like when you're trying to recover from betrayal. Like, this is so broken. This can never be good again. And I want to tell you, it can be good again. And it can be powerfully meaningful to look into the eyes of that partner that hurt you so badly, but seeing that they did this healing journey with you. And that level, it's a whole new level of spiritual and emotional connection. But it does take 2 to 5 years of hard work, recover from betrayal. And so I just want to encourage couples, you were gave that beautiful example of inviting Jesus in that moment. Jesus, help us. We are, we need the helmet of salvation over our head because there are intrusive thoughts and images coming in. I'm reminded in Hebrews, where it's talking about Jesus, our great high priest, and how he intercedes for us. And it says, in the NIV, it says he's able to save completely. But in the King James Version, it says he's able to save to the uttermost. And I love that word uttermost. And for a couple to hang on to that, those places that you think this is so hurt and broken, nothing can fully heal that. To realize Jesus can save that to the uttermost, redeem that to the very, but you do have to invite him into that. And that he and your spouse, that we're partnering together, Jesus, in this healing process.
Yeah, it's so worth it. And it's almost like there's this, again, God's kingdom is an upside down kingdom. And so it's counterintuitive to think that out of your worst pain can actually come your greatest joys. It's very counterintuitive, but you and I, again, have seen it time and time again. And so I'm going to submit it's definitely worth the journey. But that means you've got to take the steps along the way. So as part of that, as we kind of wrap up here, where can folks go to learn more about what you're doing, get that dare of the month? Where can people go to find out more about you?
So I have two URLs. Both of them go to the same place. You can go to jenniferdegler.com, which is Jennifer Degler Ministries. You can also, if you're just interested particularly in the Dare of the Month, you can go to cwives.com. So cwives.com. And that'll take you right to the page on the Jennifer Degler website that talks about how to sign up for the free Dare of the Month. But both of those will get you there and get you some free resources and see what you can do to bring some fun and some pleasure back into something that's become very heavy in your marriage.
Yeah. Well, Jennifer, as always, I love talking with you. I love the perspective that you bring on everything. So thank you for being with us again.
Well, thank you, Jonathan, for the work you do.
Yeah. Well, listeners and viewers, we're going to put all that information in the show notes today because there's lots of good stuff that Jennifer's doing. And we want to point you to help you take your next best step towards wholeness in Christ. But we're always glad you're with us. And we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.